2015 was the year the Greek crisis got serious.
Greece is on the verge of default tonight, hours from what many believe is a near certainty it will miss a Tuesday deadline to pay back more than $1 billion to the International Monetary Fund.
The country's radical left government, Syriza, led its people into a historic clash with the European Union. But the party of former communists soon fell from grace, crushed by the juggernaut of Europe's austerity addiction. Despite predictions of their imminent demise, 4 years later, Syriza was still in power.
The problem is not a Greek problem. It's a European problem.
Now the country has voted again, and the centre-right New Democracy Party has seized back power.
In Greece, Conservative Party leader Kyriakos Mitsotakis has been sworn in as Prime Minister.
In this special edition of the Another Europe is Possible podcast, we sent Luke Cooper to Athens to learn about the Greek crisis 4 years on. To feedback to us on today's show, you can get us on Twitter at @another_Europe or on facebook.com/AnotherEuropeIsPossible. Hope you enjoy it.
It's not often that the radical left takes power, but that's exactly what happened in Greece in January 2015. But it found itself constrained by huge government debts. Greece had the European Central Bank breathing down its neck. And this was ultimately all about politics. If Greece got a good deal, this would give a green light, potentially at least, to a radical left insurgency all across Europe. The austerity machine might be challenged, and the European establishment was undoubtedly worried. But the hopes of the radical left were soon dashed. Under intense pressure from other Eurozone countries, including cutting off support for the Greek banking system, Greece signed an austerity memorandum in the summer of 2015. Many spoke of capitulation. Today, in some left-wing circles, Syriza has even become a dirty word. The defeat of their anti-austerity agenda undoubtedly created a wave of disappointment all across Europe. But did they really have any choice when it came down to it? Paul Mason was reporting from Athens in July 2015.
If there's no deal, some of the projections for what happens to the Greek banks are truly frightening, especially in social media where you can share things and things go viral. I think it's really important to try and be measured and not panicky, but really the things that businesses are sharing with each other about the potential scenarios are basically the collapse of a banking system followed by the collapse of an economy. People are seriously planning. I've seen intelligence that is given to global companies for what to plan for. They're seriously planning for almost an accidental Greek exit. So the Greeks just can't do a deal. The Germans are so intransigent. You get to Friday or Monday or sometime next week, the banks can no longer go on. A big bust-up takes place over whether to seize the money of people with money in the bank in Greece. And then you get a kind of cold exit from the Eurozone.
A no deal with Europe might sound familiar to British listeners, but keep in mind Brexit, whether it happens or not, was always a decision of British voters. In contrast, there was never a majority in Greece of people who wanted to leave the euro, let alone the European Union. And given the complete economic collapse that a Greek exit from the Eurozone area would have entailed, this isn't, of course, surprising. What's more surprising, perhaps, is how the German government was willing to push for a Greek exit in the summer of 2015, despite the massive economic threat it represented to other Eurozone states and to the stability of the entire project. But after their defeat at the hands of Greece's creditors, Syriza held a new election, which, to many people's surprise, they won convincingly. But this popular support could only, it seems, last for so long. In some good news, which we can all agree with, Golden Dawn, Europe's most extreme fascist party, which, for example, openly uses the swastika, fell out of the parliament, narrowly failing to pass the 3% threshold. That's a loss of 18 seats, with all of the resources that entails for their neo-Nazi movement. Another notable result was that the new party set up by Yanis Varoufakis achieved what no other split from Syriza has ever managed, and actually won seats in the parliament. They crossed that crucial 3% threshold and will have 9 MPs, including Varoufakis himself. Congratulations to them. On election night, I was with Haris Galimis, a friend of the Another Europe campaign and former Central Committee member of the Syriza party.
What's this building we're outside? It's beautiful.
As you see, it's an old building with an ancient architecture. It's called Zapion. It's usually the place where speeches on influential events take place. After the elections, I mean, it's here the place where the treaty for the entry of Greece into the European Union took place. It's a building for this kind of events.
And this is a very somber gathering, but you think the results that we've seen tonight are not at all a bad outcome for Syriza, at least compared to what was expected previously?
Look, I cannot be the genuine speaker for Syriza's official view on the results. Mm-hmm. You can listen to that a few minutes later by Alexis Tsipras. But as far as I am concerned, I believe that the results for Syriza are excellent. You have a party which was defeated by 9.4 percentage points from the right-wing party in the European elections, and now scoring about 26, I think, percent, something like that. Yeah, 26%. And now this same party approaches or is over 30%, which is a very good result for a party that implemented an austerity policy that was forced on it by the European Union. In a similar situation, the main Social Democratic Party of PASOK was completely destroyed, and being elected with almost 40%, ended up to about 4 or 4.5% after government's period. And I think that it's a very good result. But at the same time, I believe that the fact that New Democracy, the right-wing party, has an absolute majority in the parliament is the bad side of the story. Personally, I never expected Syriza to win these elections. And I think whoever had these expectations has not a proper understanding of the political environment in Greece in this period.
And in these 4 years, I mean, no one expected Syriza to last the full four-year term, which it's almost up. It would be this September, where they absolutely had to have another election. In those difficult 4 years, there must still be a lot of Greeks who still feel an emotional attachment to the fight that Syriza waged against austerity in 2015. So it's better to have accepted austerity and really tried to fight against it than just to have rolled over.
I don't think that Syriza had a real option in July 2015 to do something else than to what it really did. Well, of course, this doesn't mean that the fact that it was not prepared for a real confrontation with the EU authorities and the Troika in general, and at the same time, it was preaching that he would not avoid this clash, was not good for the people's sentiment, because the people voted in the referendum rejecting the memoranda with 62%, and after 3 days, Syriza capitulated. As I said, it could not do otherwise. I mean, Syriza had no mandate from the part of the people to exit the European Union. So, since it was very possible, I would say almost sure, that if it denounced the diktat coming from the European Union, and if it did not compromise, this possibility was rather, was very real to happen. It was the only thing that could do. But at the same time, the fact that the party and the government tried to implement these austerity policies with as little effects on the poor sections of the society was the reason why there is the attachment that of some people that you mentioned before. This doesn't mean that Syriza did not implement policies that were against the general welfare. And it is true that while at the beginning the party gained power by promising to confront the European policies, not only the policies of the memoranda, but generally the austeritarian policies which are applied in Europe, throughout Europe, not only on indebted countries of the South. The fact that the party gave that promise and didn't keep it for very substantial reasons created a loss, but not as heavy as some people would expect it. If now the exit polls are close to the final result, if this is the situation, I believe that it condenses what has happened.
And Alexis Tsipras is just arriving. And there's several hundred supporters here. There's maybe about 100 journalists too.
People shout, Alexis, I love you, for example. Somebody said that. He's a very popular personality in Greece.
On the night of the results, just after Tsipras had finished speaking, I joined Syriza activists in Syntagma Square, right in the centre of Athens. And funnily enough, many of them were quite warm and generous to Yanis Varoufakis. Some described him as a comrade. Some said that he was good for Greek politics, that he was in the parliament, he was a good personality and so on, even if they didn't necessarily like him on a personal level. And this was interesting, the warmth and generosity that I saw from Syriza activists towards him, because in the run-up of his campaign and in the elections, Varoufakis had been very, very hostile to Syriza, even suggesting that those who were not prepared to vote for his party should actually instead vote for the hardline anti-EU Greek Communist Party. Make of that what you will. A colleague from a pro-European party advocating a vote for an anti-EU one. And in Syntagma Square, I spoke to Maria Keremesini as the results came in. She's the former president and governor of the Greek Public Employment Agency and a professor in labour economics and the economics of the welfare state.
I'm afraid of what is going to happen about some gains that have been made since August 2018, because, for example, the collective bargaining, the minimum wage, and things like that.
Maria emphasised how the votes between the left and right had largely been redistributed between different parties of the left and right, so there wasn't a big swing to the right amongst the Greek population.
If you look at the results and you make an addition between the score that Syriza obtained plus the score of Mera 25 of Varoufakis, then you see that what has been lost by Syriza is gained by Varoufakis, approximately. And if you look at the percentage, the score of Kinal, of the PASOK, then they have some 1 or 2 percentage points more than January or September 2015, which is like a return of some voters of PASOK to Kinal. But if you look broadly at results, then you see that the left, the radical left, if you also take into account the score of the Communist Party, Syriza, the Communist Party, and Varoufakis, have exactly the same score as in January and September 2015.
I asked Maria if the centre-right were pivoting to the far-right in Greece like they're doing elsewhere in Europe.
The discourse of New Democratia has already changed 2 or 3 years ago, so it's not the same. And Samaras, which was the head of Nea Dimokratia before Syriza came to government, was also the discourse of security, we are regaining the city centers, things like that. And don't forget that under the Samaras government, the close collaborator, Baldakos, was also in collaboration with the CIV, because Girl the Dawn was not a spontaneous movement, it was created also from above. It was not only created by the base of the society. So it's not new for Nea Dimokratia to incorporate, because already very prominent politicians of Nea Dimokratia, Vice President Georgiadis and a very prominent politician also Voridis, were part of far-right populist party, which was part of the coalition under the memoranda, Laos. Already before Syriza took government, in the previous coalition governments, we had incorporation of these politicians into Nea Dimokratia.
New Greek PM Kyriakos Mitsotakis has been keen to point out his liberal credentials, as he told Vice News.
I think society realized that electing populists into power is not a solution to, you know, underlying economic problems. So essentially what is happening is a pendulum is swinging in the opposite direction. We are a moderate, centre-right, liberal party.
A number of international media outlets have accepted this narrative. The Guardian, for example, described Greece coming full circle to elect its first bailout government after drama-filled years. Prior to the election, they even carried an article that discussed how Mitsotakis rolled up the sleeves of his crisp white shirts and crisscrossed the country to listen to the problems of ordinary Greeks. But as Maria outlined, the New Democracy brought in figures from the far right in this election. Adonis Georgiadis is New Democracy's deputy leader, not a minor figure. Since the election, the Jerusalem Post has reported that the Israeli government has refused to work with Georgiadis and one other minister due to their history of anti-Semitic comments and actions. The party has also appointed just 2 women to its cabinet, and many are concerned that it remains too attached to the old corrupt Greek media and shipbuilding establishment. There is no question that Syriza has had difficulty tackling the kind of vested interests that are natural to this powerful elite. This, of course, isn't easy, especially when so much energy was consumed by the battle with the creditors. I asked Maria Keremesini about the events of 2015 and how she feels about them now.
In the UK and all across Europe, that was the debate of 2015. It was the struggle of the Greeks against the austerity memorandum. There were demonstrations in Trafalgar Square. It was a huge issue in Europe that year, along with the refugee crisis. Looking back at it, what lessons do you draw from that year?
I think that without broader changes in the European framework, very small countries, and even if they have democratically elected governments and the austerity governments, there is a straitjacket in functioning of the European architecture. So it's a straitjacket. If there is no change in balance of power and progressive forces don't win in very big countries in Europe, and if the UK does not stay in Europe and there is no change in government, we don't have left-green coalitions.
And that's interesting, because it sounds like an appeal for Britain to stay in the European Union.
It's an appeal. It's an appeal. And I think that Jeremy Corbyn should rethink its policy, not only for the British people, because the European elections and the results have shown that other forces, which were clear about remaining Europe, have concentrated, have gathered votes, so he should rethink his stance for Brexit, And it's good for not only for the British people, I think, and for the Labour Party itself, if it is a party that's seeking to govern, but also for the rest of the European people. We had placed much hope in the Labour Party as the biggest left party in Europe. We had placed great hope that the stance of the Labour Party would shift towards Europe. But this has not been confirmed, and we are very sad about that. I don't think that there is hope in the next decades in the British party in Europe for the left and the progressive forces in Europe if there is no rethinking for the British Labour Party.
Thank you so much for talking to me. People are going to think that I paid you to say that because my podcast is fanatically pro-Remain. Okay. But you have to reassure my listeners that you weren't paid to say that.
Yeah, I was not paid.
The next day, I caught up with Haris Galimis again. This time he was joined by former Greek Minister for Culture and Emeritus Professor Aristidis Balitas. Welcome to the show, both of you. It's lovely to talk to you in the beautiful surrounds of Athens. What do we think, first off, initial reflections of the result? It's been 24 hours now, so time to think about it. I had some initial discussions with Haris last night.
This makes us a real force in Greece, the biggest, perhaps, left party in Europe, as things stand now. And if we manage to correct ourselves, which is not very easy, then we might be a real force behind the things at play right now, which are complicated, concern Europe, the Middle East, Turkey, United States, Iran. Very dangerous from this point of view situation. This might give us enough force to stop what the new democracy is supposed to be doing. I mean, a full-blown neoliberal program, and take back whatever we managed to win for the lower classes. So this is, I mean, a kind of point to start from.
Aristidis emphasized how after the election there was a danger that Syriza could become more and more of a social democratic party.
I think there is not a real discussion yet, but a kind of pushing us, the media, commentators, personalities of here and there, to transform Syriza into a kind of social democratic party, which I think it's not so much the programmatic aspect of that as the one leader party, without control of, you know, of the Central Committee, without democracy as we know it, but just people passing outside and voting for the leader, things like that. This will not be easy to pass, I think, because there are enough resistances to that.
Both Haris and Aristidis made this point. They argued for them the issue wasn't the policies, because there was more or less agreement on the kind of left social democratic message they should be pushing in the Eurozone and in Greece. But instead, the dispute was about the kind of party that Syriza was going to be. Would it be a movement party or a more centralised political force around a single leader? Haris emphasised the common ground between the Euro-communist tradition and social democracy when it comes to policy.
In fact, I think that on a programmatic level, the differences between, say, post-Euro-communists and the left and left social democrats maybe are not so far nowadays. For example, with the Labour Party, at least tactically. The problem is not that. The problem, as he said, is that you have a leader's party. And this is the most crucial thing.
Discussion soon turned to 2015 and the defeat Syriza suffered at the hands of other EU states over its bailout.
It's D-Day in Athens, with the Greek Parliament voting tonight on whether to accept demands of Eurozone leaders for another round of austerity in return for talks on an €86 billion bailout.
Syriza accepted, and the rest, as they say, is history. But what lessons do we take from 2015 for the struggles in Greece and internationally today?
According to me, the 7 months of first government of Syriza was an effort to persuade the Europeans that this memorandum and programs are a disaster, not just for Greece, but strategically for Europe as well. And so there should be, according to us then, a new kind of agreement. We understand that there is this debt. Maybe we should haircut it or whatever. We understand it nevertheless. There should be another way of paying that debt, which would not create this havoc in the Greek society. This was the effort. During these months, we tried to be accurate in our paying the debt that was coming up month by month, which exhausted completely the money we had. There was no new debt to cover, new loan to cover what we're paying. And when we arrived at the referendum, we were the last, literally, the last euro in the banks. There was nothing left to pay wages, pensions and things like that. The referendum, according to me, was not a yes or no to Europe. It was a yes or no to this kind of program that were imposing on us right then, and which even the Samaras government would not sign at the moment because the demands were too big for Samaras government to withstand as well.
Outside Parliament, they cheered the result. Greece has said no to its international creditors in a sensational act of national defiance.
We won the referendum. We went back to renegotiate. And there we discovered that the old Schäuble idea of having Greece out of the euro altogether was being implemented literally with email circulating among the Europeans that this is a perfect occasion to have Greece get out of the euro.
It was this threat, either accept the memorandum or leave the eurozone, that gave Greece little choice but to accept what the EU wanted. Because although the idea of deal or no deal sounds similar to Britain's debate today, in practice, it was a fundamentally different situation. If Britain left without a deal, it would face economic chaos, certainly. But it could quickly sign an agreement with the EU to end the crisis. This, of course, would make it an entirely pointless act of national self-harm. Greece, on the other hand, would not be able to rejoin the euro after leaving. They would experience a huge currency crisis, a massive devaluation of the economy as asset values were converted into the new currency. It would lead international capital free to raid a defenceless Greek economy that was desperate for foreign currency. Aristides Baltas.
The decision to sign the thing was, in effect, saving the country and Greece, because nobody would accept the Schäuble plan, of course, save the country and Greece from total destruction. Because at the time there was not one single euro in the banks, there were questions about not being able to fund a ship to go to the islands to bring water. I mean, extreme conditions, attack on the supermarkets for food, etc., etc.
This hard-headed realism sounds like the kind of issues that a radical left outside of power just doesn't have to confront or consider. But Syriza, propelled to power in 2015, did. Was there really any alternative to what Syriza chose to do in that situation?
There was no third alternative presented politically. The only alternative was Lapavitsas, in fact, who said you should have examined better the Schäuble proposal. The only one, because we had a kind of meeting of the parliamentary group or whatever, the only real alternative was that. Varoufakis was just playing a game of if we should push more, then they would withdraw and then there would be no danger, etc.
I mean, I think it's very sad, really, in a way, the way that Syriza is perceived, particularly, I must say, on parts of the British left. I mean, even the pro-European British left
I don't think there's very much sympathy for the position that Syriza had in 2015. Now, it's very easy to be critical of Syriza if you're not in a position where you have to make those kinds of choices and your kinds of decisions in a democratic society where Greeks overwhelmingly wanted to stay not only in the European Union but also in the Euro. I mean, people like Kostas Lapavitsas have a big intellectual audience in the UK, not a public audience, but a big intellectual audience. Here in Greece, just yesterday, Popular Unity, the party that I think he is still aligned to and supportive of, got 0.2% of the vote. Now, I'm not saying you should judge a political position by its electoral success. I mean, that way madness lies. However, you can have a wrong political position and it can be electorally a disaster as well.
At the beginning, Tsipras was complete victim of Varoufakis' charm. And he accepted all his views regarding the way that we should tackle the problem of being a country with a huge debt. We should try to find a way to face this big problem, implement a non-austeritarian policy, and at the same time staying in the Eurozone, disobeying the European Union and the Eurozone. I think that all this stuff was simply not possible. It was not possible. But anyway, even if some people, like, for example, Varoufakis, and others, sometimes I lean towards this position, want to really not exclude the possibility of a rupture with the European Union institutions. You should have been prepared for that, first thing. Secondly, and when I say prepared, it's something very deep. It's not only the party that should know that, but you should also convey a different message to the people, that the people should not expect their lives to improve, but what Churchill said in the Second World War, I promise to you, sweat, blood and tears. And the Greek government had not done that. When the moment came, yes, of course, I mean, there was no other way to follow the impasse in which we were in, but certainly what would be a suicidal position would be to get out of the European Union. And what Varoufakis was supporting and still supports, that there was a space of continuing this kind of negotiation and clashing with coming to a rupture with the EU, and that then the others would stand back and blah, 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 was completely a silly thing. And I believe that it is, that means that this person, although I like him as a person, and I think that he offered a sense of dignity to all the people in Europe, especially in Southern Europe, and then the poor people in Europe during the first 6 months of negotiating. I mean, it was some kind of pride seeing somebody behaving equal or even as superior to the others. But that's another thing. I mean, if you don't count the balance of forces in politics, then you are lost. And you believe that you can convince the others through your ingenuity. I think this is not politics.
Yes, I think a lot of the problem with part of the international reaction is the word austerity. So I think when people saw 2015 memorandum and they saw Syriza accepting it, they saw Syriza as accepted austerity. Whereas actually, as you've described, Syriza accepted not having the complete and total economic collapse of Greece. It didn't accept austerity, right? And I think there is a question of institutional capacity, and I guess this is my question, you know, could Greek democracy have survived the Kostas Lapavitsas program?
Grexit. would be an economic collapse in the sense that there are not enough resources in Greece to withstand the kind of international competition. And from this point of view, it would be an extreme phrase, of course, but to see what I mean, a return to the Stone Age, because there are not enough resources to keep the population, give the population enough food, medicine, imports, and things like that. Total collapse. That's why the issue of the negotiations turned into this, I think.
So I was pretty struck by these remarks and this chat, thinking about it. And it just made me dwell a bit on modern leftism, particularly for those of us that might favour what you could call a kind of radical reformism, working within the existing structures of liberal democracy to deliver fundamental social change ecologically and socially. How does a left that has never before been in power in Greece and wasn't really responsible for the problems that they inherited, how does it live to fight another day? And I think for me that was the big question, or the big lesson that comes from that experience and talking to colleagues here over the last few days. That's actually what seems to have happened, because Syriza has lived to fight another day. And it's very easy to be dismissive of that. It's very easy to sort of make criticisms from a situation where we weren't confronting this extraordinary challenge that Greece faced. But that does seem to be what has happened. They've got the hope. They've survived. The Greek left survived, and it held up its support amongst working people. There will be many debates ahead, no doubt, many that dwell on the past too, but it does seem to be a powerful vindication of the ultimate decision that they took. I'm still here in Greece and looking forward to learn much more over the next coming days about the situation. There's a tough time ahead for Greece, but we'll be covering it and we'll be talking about it. And I feel that the left internationally and all across Europe must pay more attention now to events that are happening here and build the kind of alliances and conversations that we need to be having in order to learn the lessons and develop and refine our political arguments. So this was a special edition. It was a bit of a one-off in that sense. And for that reason, there's no extra time on today's podcast. Generally, as regular listeners will know, members of Another Europe is Possible get access to extra material on the pod as a benefit for joining the campaign. We would still, of course, encourage you to join and sign up. To do so, just go to anothereurope.org/join. And as ever, if you've enjoyed today's podcast, this special edition, please leave us a rating or review on your podcast platform. You can also feedback to us by emailing podcast@anothereurope.org. Today's podcast might be a bit controversial. This is a big area of debate inside the left globally. So if you've been riled up, please suggest how we can take the debate forward by getting in touch with us over email. We'll be back very soon. See you then.